ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरयेत् जायमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवती रुत्तम श्लोके श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 22 वर्सेस 9-12। तासां वासां स्युपादाय नूपम् आरुह्य सत्वरः आरुह्य सत्वरः हसद्भि प्रहरसन् बालै प्रहरसन् बालै परिहासम् उवाचः उवाचः तासां वासां उपादाय नूपम् आरुह्य सत्वरः हसद्भि प्रहसन् बालै प्रहसन् बालै परिहासम् उवाचः उवाचः तासां वासां स्युपादाय नूपम् आरुह्य सत्वरः आरुह्य सत्वरः हसद्भि प्रहसन् बालै प्रहसन् बालै परिहासम् उवाचः उवाचः। Vaishnavis, tasmam vasam syupadaya kum aruya satvaraha hasadhi prahasam vale hasam uvachaha tasam of those girls, vasamsi, the garments, upadaya, taking, nipam, a kadamba tree, aruya, climbing, satvaraha quickly, hasadbhi who were laughing, prahasan himself laughing loudly, balai with the boys, parihasam joking words, vachaha he spoke. Translation: taking the girl's garments, he quickly climbed to the top of a kadamba tree. Then, as he laughed loudly, and his companions also laughed, he addressed the girls jokingly. This verse has no purport, so we'll read the next three verses. Lord Krishna said, "My dear girls, you may each come here as you wish and take back your garments. I am telling you the truth and I am not joking with you, since I see you are fatigued from executing austere vows. I have never before spoken a lie and these boys know it. Therefore, O slender-waisted girls, please come forward either one by one or all together and pick out your clothes." Seeing how Krishna was joking with them, the gopis became fully immersed in love for him, and as they glanced at each other, they began to laugh and joke among themselves, even in their embarrassment, but still they did not come out of the water. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanathachikra Thakur explains this verse as follows. The gopis were from most respectable families, and they might have argued with Krishna, "Why don't you simply leave our clothes on the bank of the river and go away?" Krishna might have replied, "But there are so many of you that some of the girls might take clothes belonging to another." The gopis would reply, "We are honest and never steal anything. We never touch another's property." Then Krishna would say, "If that's true, then simply come and get your clothes. What is the difficulty?" When the gopis saw Krishna's determination, they were filled with loving ecstasy. Although embarrassed, they were overjoyed to receive such attention from Krishna. He was joking with them as if they were his wives or girlfriends, and the gopis' only desire was to achieve such a relationship with Krishna. At the same time, they were embarrassed to be seen naked by him, but still they could not help laughing at his joking words, and even began to joke among themselves, one gopi urging another, "Go ahead, you go first, and let us see if Krishna plays any tricks on you. Then we will go later." Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurau Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchina Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So today morning we are coming to a very exalted part of this 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is taking the first steps in reciprocating with the love of his topmost devotees, the gopis. Prior to this, in the 21st chapter, which talked about the gopis glorify the flute of Krishna. So the gopis' expression of longing for Krishna was reported. But now Krishna reciprocating with them is being reported over here. So we will discuss this pastime in three parts. First we will look at the metaphysical implications of what is being talked. Then we will discuss about what the acharyas say about this specific pastime. And then we will discuss about how the principles demonstrated herein apply in our lives. And concludingly, we will discuss a few minutes about Gundicha Marjan, that is the sacred day today. So, at first glance, this activity of a person coming and stealing the clothes of someone and then forcing them to come in an unclothed state in front of him seems to be scandalous. And the idea that somebody can worship such a person as God can seem barbaric to an uninformed eye. And in fact, this was the primary reaction of the Western conquerors of India. Now, when the Westerners came to India, they primarily came in through, the Britishers came through Bengal. They conquered Bengal from first and then they conquered the rest of the country. So in Bengal, they encountered two primary forms of worship. That was one of Krishna and the other of Kali. And they found Kali worship to be depraved because it was brutal, and Krishna worship to be depraved because it was immoral. And in this way, there are books and books of invectives. Invectives means biting criticisms written by these Christian missionaries. And some of them have said that, you know, the whole culture of the Hindus seems to be the worst perversity that the human imagination could have ascribed in the name of religion. So their criticisms were very biting. And it was at that time, yesterday we discussed, yesterday was the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda, disappearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived at such a time when the traditional culture of India was intersecting with and was being challenged by the Western culture with its predominantly Christian values. Now, currently Western culture has not much Christianity left in it. But at that time, it was predominantly Christian. And in that age of European history, that is, they call as the age of Victorian morality. So in the age of Victorian morality, everything was, people were doing all sorts of illicit things privately, but under the reign of Queen Victoria, the idea that public morality should be maintained was very, very strongly emphasized. And it was at such a time when they encountered these kind of pastimes of Krishna, they came in for a very severe criticism. So when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to re-establish Krishna consciousness, now he faced such inimical forces, and he wrote an essay called the Bhagavata. And in that Bhagavata, that was like one of his formative, foundational intellectual works on which he built later in books like Krishna Samhita, Chaitanya Shikshamrit and Jaiva Dharma. So in the Bhagavata, he said that the modern mind will face three primary obstacles in understanding the Bhagavata. So the first obstacle is the chronological and the cosmological details, which will seem to be mythological. The fifth canto especially describes this, the chronological and the cosmological. So thousands of years, millions of years of lifespan of beings like Brahma, and universes with such vast dimensions and such gigantic mountains, it all seems mythological.
So if a book talks about such mythology, how can it have anything useful in it? So that might be one reason because of which the modern mind may reject the Bhagavatam. And then he anticipated that and he said, don't bother about that. Now that is not the most important message of the Bhagavatam. The primary message of the Bhagavatam is its message of love. Now trying to understand the cosmology of the world through the Bhagavatam is like trying to understand or trying to draw the map of America by studying Srila Prabhupada's Leelamrita. Now, Leelamrita describes how Prabhupada went to various places in America. But the purpose of that book is not geographical. Similarly, Bhagavatam is not a cosmological book. Of course, by studying other relevant books like Jyotish Shastra, devotees are endeavoring to build a planetarium in Mayapur. But the planetarium, the cosmology, is not the primary message of the Bhagavatam. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, put that aside. In fact, he said that the fifth canto is put there so that the faithless can be obstructed from reaching the confidential pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto. The second obstacle, he said, is the complexity of thought. You know, the third canto talks about Sankhya, the second canto talks about Virata Rupa, the 11th canto talks about elaborate philosophy in Uddhava Gita. So the philosophy is so complex. And then he very intelligently tickles the false ego of his readers by saying, yeah, if it is difficult, then it should stimulate your sense of challenge. And then if the ancients could have come up with such profound thoughts, then you are moderns are more developed. Surely you should be able to understand it. Just apply yourself a little bit. Be patient to understand it. And the third obstacle is the obstacle of immorality. That the Bhagavatam ultimately centers, it builds up towards the worship of Krishna. And when it is building up towards the worship of Krishna, the centerpiece of the Bhagavatam, which is the 10th canto, and the centerpiece of the 10th canto is the conjugal pastimes. And they seem to be blatantly immoral. So how can a book that is considered to be the summum bonum, the highest wisdom within a tradition, glorify something that is so blatantly immoral? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur turns this question around and says that if it is obvious to us that this is immoral, then the thinkers who composed the Bhagavatam, was it not obvious to them? And yet they described it in a book which condemns sexual attachment and sexual depravity throughout. Just before the 10th canto. Now I am not repeating Bhaktivinoda Thakur's word. I am paraphrasing his argument over here and supplementing it further. The same Bhagavatam before it goes to the 10th canto has the 9th canto where the degrading power of lust is demonstrated repeatedly and graphically through not one, not two, but three pastimes. The pastime of Shaubari, the pastime of Yayati, and the pastime of Pururava. And there is also a pastime of Brihaspati, very briefly mentioned. So, in none of these cases is sexual immorality glorified. In fact, it is strongly condemned. And it is described how these people became degraded and how one should save oneself from attachment. So, from the Bhagavatam itself, the authors of the Bhagavatam, so now he is not presenting Bhagavatam as a divine revelation coming from God. Because that would be immediately dismissed by these people. He says, okay, just think objectively. There is definitely profundity in the Bhagavatam's thoughts. And the Bhagavatam is not unaware of sexual morality and immorality. So if the same Bhagavatam condemns sexual immorality in the previous canto, why would it glorify sexual immorality in the next canto? Then he turns the question around, might this not be sexual immorality? Might there be something higher that is being talked here, something that is dramatically different from our normal conceptions? And in this way, he opens the minds of people and presents. So that lecture that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave marked a turning point in his intellectual career as the representative of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the modern times. And since then, many of the intellectual elite of his time started taking Gaudiya Vaishnavism seriously. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote prodigiously. He wrote almost 108 books, and more than 100 books practically speaking. And he built a virtual community of readers all around Bengal and Orissa, who through his books got a proper understanding. So, what is this proper understanding? See, there is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur realized that there is a huge gap between the traditional commentaries and the contemporary mind. The traditional commentaries are focusing on the rasic aspect. For example, here Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary is talking about the inner feelings of the gopis and the conversations that happened between gopis and Krishna at that time. This is all rasic. This already accepts that there is nothing improper, there is nothing immoral, this is simply sweet and relishable. But, so this is how the traditional commentaries accept this not just as moral, they accept it as relishable and then help us to relish it further. But this sort of presentation will be largely incomprehensible to people who question the very basic morality of the whole pastime. So he says that actually when we talk about God, we have to understand God in His completeness. So now this argument it isn't given in his Bhagavad lecture. He goes in Chaitanya Shikshamrut and Tattva Vivek, Tattva Sutra, several of his other books, Amnaya Bhashya. He goes on talking about the conception of God that is there in the Abrahamic religions. Abrahamic religions are the Western religions, Judaism, Christianity and Islam. And the conception of God that is given in the Vedic tradition. So, the conception of God that is given in the Abrahamic religions is very limited. There is not much positive description about God. And because of that, often these religions, they focus more on ethics and humanitarianism because they don't have much transcendental substance on which to focus. So, the Vedic scriptures explain that if God is to be complete, then His completeness means that everything that is present in the world is present in Him. So, in this world, the most fundamental defining reality, in a sense, is the male-female attraction. That is what makes, in many ways, the world move. So, now, the question of where does this male-female attraction come from, that is largely unanswered in the Abrahamic traditions. Now, because there the conception of God is limited, so where does this come from? There are two different approaches. One says that it's understood that this attraction can degrade a person, and therefore it must be restricted within the sacred bounds of marriage. But where does this attraction come from? There is no explanation for this. So the Bhagavad Gita indicates in 15.1 that this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Urdhvamulamada shakham ashvattham prahuravayam chandam siyasya paranani yastam vedasa vedavet. So by giving the metaphor of upside down banyan tree, the Bhagavad Gita indicates that this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And a reflection contains that which is fundamentally present in the reality. Now it is not that everything that is present in the reflection in all its details must be present in the reality. Because when the reflection is there may be a beautiful mango that is reflected, but when there are waves in the mango or in the river, that mango may get distorted. And the shape of the mango may get perverted. But essentially, that distortion and perversion won't happen if there is nothing in the original. If there is no mango only, then the image will not get distorted. So, if the male-female attraction is present in the world, then it must be there in the spiritual world also. Now, of course, this male-female attraction gets perverted. It becomes distorted in many ugly ways in this world. And that is due to the effect of the three modes. The three modes are like the waves which shake the reflection. And that's why things get distorted over here. But in their originality, the male-female attraction is present in the spiritual world. So, how is that present? Radha Krishna Eka Atma Dui Deha Dhari. The Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that Radha and Krishna are one person. Ek Atma Dui Deha Dhari. They are one soul who have manifested as two. And for what purpose? Anyonya Vilasakori. For the sake of performing pastimes. For the sake of relishing love. So, the Vedic conception of God is not limited to a male divinity. The Vedic conception of God is complete, and that's why God is understood to be both male and female. You know, in modern and postmodern intellectual circles, it is very fashionable. Is God male or female? So I wrote an article long ago in Times of India in the Speaking Tree column. So I wrote that if before we can understand whether God is male or female, we have to understand that we are neither male nor female. We are souls. Now, as long as we assume that we are male or female, then we try to ascribe our gender on God. The Bhagavad Gita starts by telling us that we are not the body. So, our bodily gender has got nothing to do with our spiritual identity. So, beyond that, but where does our bodily gender and the polarity, the duality of bodily gender come from? It comes from a reality in the spiritual world. And that is God Himself manifests in two forms. So, we have Radha Krishna, we have Sita Ram, we have Lakshmi Narayan. So, like that, there are different forms where God manifests as a divine couple. Now, both the members of this divine couple are God. Although they are God in identity, but they are not God in personality. It is one person who manifests in different personalities. So, is Radharani God? Yes, Radharani is God. But she is God in identity, not in personality. She has a female form, she has a female mood, and in that way, she reciprocates love with Krishna. So, Krishna is God, and Radharani is God as his topmost devotee. And not only that, the intimate associates of Radharani, the confidential sakhis, they are actually the expansions of Radharani. They are called as the Parakaya Vyuha. Parakaya Vyuha means the expansions of Radharani in other forms. Kaya is body, para is other. Parakaya. So there is a yogic siddhi called Parakaya Pravesh. That means the soul can enter into another body. So Parakaya is another body. Parakaya Vyuha means Radharani, for the sake of expanding her service to Krishna, manifests herself in many female forms. Now, the gopis are not exactly in the same tattva as Radharani. They are not the Supreme Lord. They are actually the devotees of the Supreme Lord. But actually they are expansions of Radha Krishna, of Radharani specifically. Now, from one point of view, logically, we can understand that if God is complete, if the spiritual world is complete, then the male-female duality and polarity that is there in this world must be present in the spiritual world also. But then the next question comes up, what is the nature of the male-female relationship in the spiritual world? So, now, as I said earlier, first of all, we have to understand that we are not our bodies. Otherwise, we will apply our bodily conceptions on the absolute truth. So, the Bhagavatam talks about the Madhurya Leela in the 10th canto. And before that, it describes the loving reciprocations between Krishna and his devotees. Krishna in various forms and various devotees in multiple ways. There is a renowned sage who is a great devotee. There is a king on the verge of death who is a great devotee. There is a son who gives instruction to his mother. and there is a small child who goes to the forest, and there is a small child who has a demoniac father, and there is a king of heaven, and there is a king of the demons, and both of them are devotees. So, in this way, the Bhagavatam gives a wide variety in the gamut of human-divine relationships. And in all these, the emphasis is that whether the person is born in a demoniac family, so the most antithetical, you know, if you see, if you want to have the picture of devotees, now we have in the first canto, Kunti Devi, you know, she is a gentle, sweet, elderly, motherly lady, and she is offering prayers to Krishna. And from the material point of view, in the sixth canto, now she is saying, let my thoughts flow only towards you. And actually in the sixth canto, the same prayer is offered, let my thoughts flow only towards you, by a person who is externally entirely different. And that is Vritrasura. Now Vritrasura is the opposite of the motherly, gentle, caring Kunti Devi. You know, he is having a bald head, glaring eyes, gigantic form. And when he walks, the soldiers of the devatas get crushed under his feet. And when he laughs, people tremble. So, externally, he is the antithesis of what we would consider to be a devotee. But from that heart also, under that external is a heart that is filled with the same love for Krishna that is present in the heart of Kunti Devi. So by this dramatic difference in the forms of the devotees, the Bhagavatam urges us to go beyond externals. To not look at externals, but to focus on the internal emotions. And by all this dramatic difference in the disposition, in the forms of the devotees, so their positions are radically different, but their dispositions are entirely similar. Their social, cultural, even religious positions are different. Vritrasura is a demon. Indra is a devotee, is a devata. But their dispositions are similar. In fact, Vritrasura's disposition is far greater in terms of his devotional intensity and fidelity. So, by taking us beyond these externals, the Bhagavatam then brings us in the 10th canto to the pastimes between Krishna and the gopis. So before we can understand the pastimes between Krishna and the gopis, we have to understand that this is not just a male and a female. This is God and his devotee. So from the point of view of Shukadeva Goswami, actually he is not seeing the gopis primarily as females. He's seeing the gopis as devotees. And for him, Krishna is not a male. Not female and male, the way we see in the material world. Krishna is God. So, when Shukadeva Goswami is describing, say, how Krishna embraces the gopis, for him, essentially, there is no difference between Krishna embracing the gopis and Narasimhadev embracing Prahalad. Or Lord Ram embracing Hanuman. Because essentially, it's a reciprocation of love between the devotee and the Lord. So, till we develop this vision that we see the gopis not as females, but as devotees, first and foremost. And we see Krishna not as a male, but as God. The 9 cantos of Bhagavatam help us to see this substance of devotion in all the multiplicity of the human-divine relationships. And only when we have been able to see the substance of devotion, then it reveals the transcendental form of devotion. So, now when I say that we should focus on seeing the substance, that does not mean that the gopis' female form and Krishna's male form are unimportant. They are important, but they are important in a transcendental sense, not in a material sense. So from the material perspective, whatever perceptions that we gain by externals, you know, we see a tender-hearted elderly lady and we see a ferocious, brutal demon, our perceptions are different. But go beyond these material perceptions to the spiritual substance, that is the devotion in the heart. So, but once we have gone to that substance of devotion, then the Bhagavatam reveals a higher reality. That higher reality is that devotion is not just a substance. Devotion also has its transcendental forms. And those transcendental forms are five. There are the five rasas. So Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurya. And among these, Madhurya is considered to be the highest. So, why is Madhurya the highest? Because Krishna arranges that his topmost devotees serve him in the Madhurya Bhava. So, actually, the characteristic of Dasya Ras, sorry, of Shanta Ras, which is below even Dasya in the transcendental hierarchy, the characteristic of Shanta Ras is complete detachment from matter and complete attachment to God. So, the male-female attraction is rejected even at Shanta Ras, the male-female attraction as we know it in the material world. But at the transcendental level, there is reciprocation of love. And for the reciprocation of love, there are appropriate forms. So, the Madhurya Rasa is the highest, and the devotees who serve Krishna in the Madhurya Rasa are the highest of the devotees. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami contrasts between prema and kama. And he gives quite a provocative definition of prema. He says, Atmendri priti vancha tare bole kam. That the desire for satisfying one's own senses is lust. Now we would say that, okay, if selfishness is lust, then love will be selflessness. Now this is a normal common sense understanding. But the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita are taking us far beyond common sense. They are taking us to transcendental sense. And he gives us, what is the definition of love? He says, Krishnendriyat priti icha dhare premanam. The desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna is prema. Now it's significant that in this definition itself, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says that Krishna has senses. And satisfying the senses of Krishna is love. So it's quite a provocative definition. Normally we would say love means selflessness. Okay, lust is selfish, love is selfless, that is fine. Yes, love is self-centered and lust is self-centered, love is not self-centered. But the Bhagavatam goes beyond being selfless to revealing the highest summit of selflessness. And the highest summit of selflessness is God-centeredness. And God, as revealed in the Bhagavatam, is not just an abstract principle. God is a person. And as a person, he has senses. He has eyes. He has ears. He has tongue. So, when Radharani, she cooks for Krishna. Through the cooking, she is offering her love through Krishna. So, Krishnendriya priti icha dhare premanam, that the desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna, that is called love. So Krishna, Radharani wants to cook the best food for Krishna and satisfy the tongue of Krishna. So similarly, Krishna has eyes and the gopis are themselves exquisitely beautiful and they want to decorate themselves beautifully for the pleasure of Krishna. So that is something which is entirely transcendental. But the point is, transcendence is not just some amorphous, pious haze. Transcendence is a living, loving reality where there are individuals with forms. So Krishna has a form, Radharani has a form, the gopis have a form. So now, the way reality is constituted in this world gives indication of the way reality is in the spiritual world. The female form, as is manifested in this world, is best suited for service to the male form.
this is not a gender male chauvinistic idea, but if there is a proper loving reciprocation, then the male-female relationship is based on mutual service. But the service that the male offers to the female and the female offers to the male is different. So, the female form is best suited for service to the male. And this is because there is a transcendental reality. Among all the various ways and in various forms that the devotees serve Krishna, in the transcendental realm, the reality is that the female form is best suited to serve the supreme male, that is Krishna. So, those devotees who are the most exalted, whose love is the most selfless, those devotees are having the form which has the most facilities to serve Krishna. So the gopis are able to serve Krishna with all, through all his senses. The gopis cook for Krishna, the gopis sing for Krishna, the gopis dance for Krishna. The gopis serve Krishna in every possible way. And they have such a desire to love Krishna. Now, before we look at this pastime, where apparently Krishna is doing something immoral, we have to look at the selflessness of the gopis' love. Earlier we discussed how, even at a preliminary level, lust is selfish, love is selfless. So, the selflessness of the love of the gopis is seen by how, to relieve Krishna of a headache, for one moment, they are ready to go to hell for all of eternity. So, that reveals how the gopis' heart is situated at the pinnacle of the pyramid of devotion. They are situated at the topmost devotional level. And once we understand that the gopis are so supremely, divinely selfless, then we can understand how Krishna gives them the topmost facilities to serve him. And that topmost facility is the female form. Now when I say that Krishna gives the female form, it is not that the gopis are separate and the female form is separate. The gopis are eternally having a female form. But we talk about causality in the transcendental realm, that this is cause and this is effect. That is not to indicate a time sequence. That is to understand the philosophical principle. Just as we say that Radha Krishna are two and they became one as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now it is not that there was a time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't exist. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eternal. But when we talk of Radha Krishna wanting to understand the love of Radharani and becoming Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is not in a time sequential sense. That is in a philosophical expository sense. In the point of explaining a philosophical principle. So it is not that the gopis are here and the female forms are here and the souls take the gopis' forms. That may happen for some sadhanas in the gopis. Krishna Sandarbha analyzes that elaborately. But the intimate associates of Krishna, the confidential sakhis, they are all eternal. Eternally they have the female form, they have the highest devotion, and they serve Krishna with the highest devotion. So, it is this supreme devotion that is being manifested here in this world. So now, we have to look at this pastime. So, in its full context. So, I'll look at its context in three ways. What comes either before and after that in the Bhagavatam, then what comes in the broader Vedic canon about Krishna Leela, and then what the Acharyas have explained. So if we look at this, what are the gopis doing? Now Vishnachakra Anandandavan Champu Kavi Karanapur explains that Radharani is not among these gopis. These gopis who have worshipped Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband, they are Dhanyasakhi. Dhanyasakhi is one of the sakhis, and she is the leader of a large group of sakhis. These are young, unmarried gopis. So Radharani, she worships Surya. She doesn't worship Katyayani. Of course, it's not that she disrespects Katyayani, but she primarily worships Surya. Padma Bandhu Radhika, as the Radhikashtakam says. So, so these Dhanyasakhi and others, they actually are great devotees. And the intensity, indeed the desperation of their devotion for Krishna is seen by how they are ready to adopt anything and everything to attain Krishna. And what is that anything and everything? they are doing a severe vrata to Katyayani.
So what was this vrata? Every morning, early in the morning, they would wake up and go to the Yamuna and bathe in the freezing cold water of Yamuna. And in this way, they wanted to please Katyayani, and by pleasing Katyayani, they wanted to attain Krishna's association. They wanted to attain Krishna as their Lord. And it is described that Katyayani comes to them. This pastime is happening. They are doing a month-long vrata. And just before the last day, on the penultimate day, Katyayani appears to them. And she tells them, actually, your devotion to Krishna is so great. Krishna is my Lord also. And you will surely attain Krishna. And then, to fulfill the desire of the gopis, who are his great devotees, to fulfill the word of Katyayani, who is also his devotee, Krishna performs this pastime. And in this pastime, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes a philosophical principle. The philosophical principle is that in the Vedic culture, the chastity of the females is very much valued. And anybody violating that chastity is considered very brutal and is punished. So, when Krishna steals the clothes of the gopis, what does this represent? Now, if this were just some normal lusty activity, then a man who wants to abuse a woman, he will not just steal the clothes and stand there. Now, the man will do much, much more things. Much more debauchery the person will do. But in Vedic culture, the principle is that only when a woman is married to a man and they are united in dharma, then the woman can be unclothed in front of a man. So when Krishna is stealing the garments of the gopis and seeing them unclothed, essentially he is accepting their desire that he be their lord. He is accepting them as his wives. So here the emphasis is not on what the lusty mind will conjure on hearing this. The emphasis is on accepting the devotional intent of the sakhis, of the gopis. And Krishna accepts this. So, some people ask, how can you worship such a god who is lusty? If Krishna were simply lusty in an ordinary sense, now this pastime is called as the Vastraharan Leela. And there is another Vastraharan Leela which is talked in very negative terms. Now, if Krishna were just a lusty god, then why would he would have, I also did the same thing, Duryodhana, you also do the same thing. No, there it is adharmic. There it is adharmic, and Krishna miraculously comes and saves Draupadi over there. So, Krishna is the preserver of morality. And here what is being talked about is transcendental morality. And Krishna's preservation of morality is seen in the next chapter itself. The 23rd chapter is Krishna's reciprocation with the Yagyik Brahman Patnis. And there, what happens is, the Yagyik Brahman Patnis, when they hear that Krishna is hungry and wants food, they have heard from Narada about the glories of Krishna, and actually they leave everything and come to Krishna. And when they are going, their husbands actually oppose them. He says, the Brahmanas say, how can you go? We are performing sacrifices. And in the sacrifice, the husband and the wife have to be together. If you go away, the sacrifice cannot be performed. Wait. Say, no, Krishna has called, we will go. So, even the Yagyik Brahman Patnis, they also demonstrate the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. See, what is the conclusion? Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. So there are some Hindus who can't digest this. So I saw one rendition of the Bhagavad Gita where they had rendered this, as they were reciting it, Sarva adharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. They had put a before that. How can God tell you how to give up dharma? But the point is that there are levels of dharma. And for the sake of lower dharma, for the higher dharma, lower dharma can be given up. So, when the gopis are appearing unclothed in front of Krishna, when the gopis are leaving at night to go and meet Krishna, when the Yagyik Brahmana Patnis are leaving their husbands to go to Krishna, they are not doing adharma. They are demonstrating the supreme dharma. That is, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. So for a woman, her most cherished dharma is chastity. But for the sake of Krishna, the gopis demonstrate the supreme renunciation by being ready to renounce even their chastity. So, there is immorality, there is morality, and there is transcendental morality. In immorality, morality is given up because of selfish passion. So, when in an ordinary male-female relationship, if somebody does something extramarital, that is immoral, because one is giving up morality for one's own sensual pleasure. But in the case of transcendental morality, morality is given up for the sake of the pleasure of Krishna. And that is glorious. Because that means, you know, one is not attached to the bad of this world. That is good. But one is ready to give up the bad of this world for the sake of God. That is good. We give up sinful activities because we want to be devoted to God. That is good. But to be ready to give up even the good of this world for the sake of God, that is the supreme religion. And Sarva Dharman Parityajya means give up everything material, good, bad and good for the sake of God. So what is being demonstrated here is that the topmost devotees are ready to sacrifice even their chastity for the sake of God. So this has got nothing to do with immorality at all. It is demonstrating transcendental morality. The supreme morality is being demonstrated over here. And here, now we see in the next chapter, when the Yajnik Brahman Patnis do the same thing, what does Krishna tell them? Krishna says that, you know, more important than my direct proximity is proximity through memory. Now you hear about me, speak about me, remember me, and that way you will have my presence in your heart. And the Yajnik Brahman Patnis protest. It's a Krishna. He says, you know, when a river leaves the mountain and flows down to the ocean, how can the river go back to the mountain? He says, we have left everything and come to you. How can we go back to you? It is not possible. So, Kavi Karanapur describes in Anandam Champu that Krishna does not want to disrupt the social fabric and culture at his time. So Krishna is playing the role of being born in the Vaishya family, and the Yajnik Brahman Patnis are Brahmanas. So, and they are already married. So Krishna doesn't want to disrupt morality. And he accepts their devotion in principle, but in form he tells them to go back. Whereas Vrindavan is his own home. Vrindavan is his own home. So both the Yajnik Brahman Patnis and the gopis do Sarva Dharman Parityajya. But Krishna does not allow the Yajnik Brahman Patnis to actually complete the Sarva Dharman Parityajya. They say, go back and follow Dharma. But because Vrindavan is his own home, and everyone in Vrindavan are his most intimate devotees, he accepts the Sarva Dharman Parityajya of the gopis. And this, what has begun in this pastime in 22nd chapter, will be completed in chapters 29 to 33 in the Ras Panchadhyaya. So, Krishna here accepts in principle that yes, I am your Lord and you are all my consorts. And he accepts them and then he performs the Rasa in the 33rd chapter. And there also, in the Rasa Panchadhyaya, 29 to 33 chapters. But there also, Krishna first emphasizes morality. And then he says, you know, how can I am a young boy and you are young girls. How can you come alone at night like this? Have you come to see the beautiful forest? If that is so, now you can go back. So the gopis, they get both embarrassed and irritated. So they feel embarrassed that Krishna is talking about morality. You know, it is. Generally, women are considered to be the custodians of morality, in the sense that women teach moral principles to the children. So for anyone to tell a woman that she is being immoral and she is offering herself, that is the ultimate humiliation. But at that, for the woman, gopis feel embarrassed, but at the same time they are irritated. They say, Krishna, you only called us, now why are you sending us back? Pati sutanvaya bhratru bandhavan ati vilangyate antyachyutagataha gati vidastava udgita mohitaha kitava yoshitas kastya jainishi the gopis pray that we left all our relatives, pati sutanvaya bhratru bandhavan, we left all of them and came to you. Ativilangyate. And why we came? Tava udgita mohitaha. Because of the sound of your flute. It was udgita, it was very loud. Now generally, you know, when music is very loud, it is not considered very melodious. Now sometimes when the kirtan becomes very loud, you know, there is ecstasy in that, but that is not considered melodious sometimes. But Krishna's flute song is so extraordinary that it is very soft and melodious, but at the same time, that sound for the gopis is so loud, so deafening, that they don't hear anything else. They don't hear anything said by anyone else, because for them that sound of Krishna's flute is the call of love. And he says, Krishna, it is you who called us. How can you tell us to go away? How can you leave us? So, Krishna, even in the Rasa Panchadhyaya, offers tribute to morality. But then when he sees the intensity of the love of the gopis, then he transcends morality. So then, he demonstrates transcendental morality, where the Rasa Leela is the celebration of divine love in its topmost form. So the gopis and Krishna, their loving reciprocation demonstrates God in His completeness. What is God in His completeness? God in His completeness means Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki jai, that everything that we want to enjoy distortedly in this world, actually that is present in its purest and fullest form in Krishna. And it is this highest reality that is being talked about, that is being hinted at, that is being developed by Shukadeva Goswami in this pastime. So, now Shukadeva Goswami is seeing everything from a transcendental perspective, but Parikshit Maharaj, as a part of the audience, is aware, and that's why he asks, what is happening? And Krishna says that actually, Shukadeva Goswami says that Krishna is transcendental. The violation of moral principles by the Supreme proves His supremacy. It's a very interesting logic that Shukadeva Goswami uses. He says, violation of morality by the Supreme proves His supremacy. So, we accept that God is supreme. Morality is not supreme. We accept morality as important. But God is not a servant of morality. Morality is a servant of God. So, when God violates morality, it is not that He is being immoral. He is demonstrating His superiority to morality. He is demonstrating His supremacy. Krishna is never motivated by any selfish desire. Krishna is motivated simply by the selfless love that is there in His heart and that is there in His devotees' hearts. So, the Rasa Panchadhyaya ultimately, the Madhurya Rasa, and especially the Parakiya Rasa within Madhurya Rasa, which apparently seems immoral, that demonstrates that in the spiritual reality, love reigns supreme. It is not morality that supreme reigns, it is not even God that is supreme. It is love that reigns supreme. So, how does morality not reign supreme? Because Krishna and the gopis sacrifice, renounce what is normally considered morality for the sake of loving reciprocation. So now, how is God not supreme? Now, God doesn't try to preserve His reputation. He doesn't say, what will people think about me? Krishna gives Himself up to love. In fact, in the spiritual world, Krishna doesn't even manifest His divinity. Now Krishna doesn't, all the gopis and the Vrajavasis, they're not thinking that Krishna is God. They think Krishna is simply the most lovable of all Vrajavasis. He's the cynosure of all eyes. He's the heartthrob of all hearts. He is the life of all our lives. They don't think of Krishna as God. For them, Krishna is their be-all and end-all. And there, Krishna values their love the most. So Krishna conceals even His divinity. In Vrindavan, Krishna gives up His divinity so that there can be the reciprocation of love. And this is the ultimate gift of the Bhagavatam. The vision of the spiritual world where love reigns supreme. Love reigns supreme over morality, love reigns supreme over even divinity, over God. And it is that love that is the heart's ultimate fulfillment. Now that is the love that we are all longing for. We seek for that love in the temporary physical relationships of this world. but they ultimately lead to disappointment and even devastation because they are all temporary. So, if the Bhagavatam did not reveal this vision of love as a supreme reality, we would not understand where the love of this world comes from. And renouncing this love would become difficult. Because when we understand, okay, if somebody shows us this is the real mango and this is the reflection, and now forget the reflection, move towards the real mango, then it's easier. But if we don't know whether it's a real mango, and I say, don't take that man, don't take that, don't take that. Why? That's the only thing that looks good, I need it. I can't live without it. But what the Bhagavatam tells us, yes, the love of this world is there, but it is a reflection of the pure love between Krishna and the gopis. And Krishna and all his devotees, in fact, at the topmost level, Krishna and his gopis. So by revealing the pure intimate love that reigns supreme in the spiritual realm, the Bhagavatam gives us the means by which we can break free from the lure of the love, false love of this world, the temporary love of this world. And that's why what the Bhagavatam says at the end of the Ras Panchadhyaya is, one who understands this pastime, what will happen? Vikriditam rajavadhuviridam cha vishnu shraddhanvito anushrunaya datar nayedya. So he says that one who hears the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, what will happen to them? Bhaktim param bhagvati pratilabhya kamam hridrogamashu apahinotya chirena dhiraha. That actually by hearing these pastimes properly, anushrunaya, by properly, from proper authorities, the lust in the heart will go away and love will come in. Love will stream in. The lust of the heart, rudrogam ashwa apahinoti. The heart disease. And all of us are heart patients. And all of us keep getting heart attacks. So the heart attacks are the attacks of lust. But we'll become free from these heart attacks. And paktim param bhagvati pratilabhyakamam. We'll get pure love. Now imagine if some movie says, you know, you watch this movie, by watching this movie, this is a romantic movie, and all desire for romance will go away after watching this movie. Say, what is this nonsense? What are you talking about? But what the Bhagavatam is saying something like this. You know, this is the romantic movie of Krishna, Gopi's pastime, and by this, all sexual attraction will go away. It doesn't make sense. It makes sense when we understand there is a hierarchy. There is a reflection and there is a reality. So when we see the reality, the attraction to the reflection will go away. That, so the male-female attraction of this world is a reflection. And when we understand the real male-female attraction, the real attraction between devotee and the Lord in the spiritual world, then the male-female attraction of this world will no longer captivate us. And that is the ultimate freedom. The freedom from lust, the freedom for love. That is the ultimate way to fulfill the heart's longing for love and happiness. So I'll summarize. We started by talking about how, from the moral point of view, this pastime appears scandalous. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was present at a time when he anticipated that the chronology, the philosophy and the morality, the seeming immorality of the Bhagavatam would pose problems for the intellectual elite of his times. And then we explain, so based on the whole Gaudiya Siddhanta, how this is not immorality, this is transcendental morality. So the Bhagavatam acknowledges morality, sexual morality in the ninth canto itself, but then it presents us transcendental morality by showing how the Lord and the devotee can be in so many different forms. The devotee can be a gentle elderly lady or a ferocious, frightening demon. But the substance of devotion is what is important. Then the Bhagavatam reveals to us the substance of devotion as the, in the heart of the female devotees and the Lord as an attractive male. And then it reveals that the substance is manifested in a form in the spiritual realm. And the female form is best suited for service. And that's why the devotees who have the highest devotion, who have the greatest desire to serve Krishna, they have the form that is most conducive to serve Krishna, that is the female form. And in principle, in substance, Krishna's relationship with the gopis, Krishna's embracing the gopis, is non-different from Narasimhadeva embracing Prahlad or Ram embracing Hanuman, because it's the reciprocation of love that is important, primarily. But within the spiritual reality, Krishna is not just a principle, he's a person. He has senses. The devotees have senses.
And with their spiritual senses, the devotees serve Krishna's spiritual senses. And that is the fullness of spiritual love. It is not just selflessness in terms of being free from lust. It is selflessness in terms of wanting to please Krishna, to satisfy Krishna's senses. And then we discussed about this particular pastime. It demonstrates sarva dharman parityaja. It demonstrates how love reigns supreme by the sacrifice of dharma, the sacrifice of morality, for females the sacrifice of chastity, for the sake of love of God. And through this picture of pure spiritual love, the Bhagavatam enables us to become free from the captivation of impure material love of this world and focus undistracted on advancing towards the world of eternal love. Thank you very much. We are quite late, so I will not speak anything about Gundija Mahajan today. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupad ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande.